A longtime high school coach shares his fondest memories as the school gets ready to shut its doors. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome back to After the Score. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. The Blue Jackets continue their up and down ways. We'll get the latest on their playoff chances.
And Steve and I fill out our NCAA March Madness brackets, and I think he'll fare about as well as he did on our Big Ten tournament predictions.
No, look, the funny guy here's got jokes. We'll get to those jokes in just a few minutes. But first, we do turn to a serious topic. Brookhaven High School. The high school just off Morse Road has seen its share of championship teams and alumni go on to the pros, but there won't be any more. Earlier this month, district administrators voted to close Brookhaven at the end of the school year and send students to nearby high schools. We're joined now by Holly Robinson. He spent 39 years coaching several different sports at Brookhaven. Mr. Robinson, welcome to After the Score. Before we get started, I want to play a piece of audio that I think you'll like.
2-1.
Has been awesome. Let's it go. Bingo! He ties it at 62.
That was Paul O'Neill hitting a home run in the 1995 playoffs for the Yankees. Former Buckeye and Dallas Cowboy Terry Glenn scoring against Notre Dame in 1995 as well. And Ron Lewis hitting a game-tying shot in the 2007 NCAA tournament for Ohio State. All are Brookhaven alums. And Mr. Robinson, you have to just swell with pride when you hear something like that.
Such great, great memories. You could just as easily pull down a sound bite on Chris Johnson, NIT MVP, Jamel Conley, NIT MVP in the New York Madison Square Garden on back-to-back years. Jamel Conley representing Penn State University, Chris Johnson representing the University of Dayton, and currently with the Boston Celtics. So those are tremendous sound bites that you have afforded our listening audience, and I do appreciate what you've done.
Well, Steve cut it off a little bit early there, but after that Gus Johnson call of Ron Lewis, Drew Lavender actually heaves up a half-court shot, and they were teammates together at Brookhaven, were they not?
Drew Lavender, Xavier University, that was one of the great, great early contests in Thad Matta's wonderful and historic career here at The Ohio State University. That was a memorable, memorable contest.
And these are some wonderful memories that we're listening to. But we are here on somewhat of a sad note, especially for you. Brookhaven High School closing at the end of this year. First of all, how did you hear Brookhaven was closing, and what was your reaction?
Well, there were whispers at the end of last year that due to declining enrollment that we may have been up for consideration for closing, but there was no closure. There was never any closure to the chatter from downtown 270 State Street where the Board of Education is. That chatter became full-bore conversation in our community, and it was brought to fruition by our current superintendent, Mr. Good, that for physical reasons and due to declining enrollment, this was the right thing to do.
And your opinion?
I think as we move forward, Brookhaven was never a community school over the past 20 years. I came there in 1978 as a result of busing, and Brookhaven became sort of a lighthouse school where kids came from somewhere else. Fortunately, it happened at the culmination of the juncture of desegregation in the Columbus City Schools in 1978. Busing, we had a tremendous and incredible white population. After years, it stabilized, and then we began to get a diversity of enrollment. But that enrollment was never sustainable over a period of years, even though our student population was bused in. So I understand in terms of Brookhaven's viability as a learning community why Mr. Good made the decision that he made.
Mr. Robinson, have you spoke to any former students or former athletes that have expressed concerns about being closed? Or what's the general sentiment of a current and alumni?
Well, I think the general sentiment, and it's a wonderful question regarding the closure, is, as you guys know here at this wonderful institute, The Ohio State University, you cannot have legacy if you don't have place. So the memories, the pitches, the trophies, all of those things become somewhat tarnished memories if there's no place for the journey of those who come back and look at those fond memories. So that is people are calling from as far away as California, Las Vegas, and some of the other places they have moved their families to. What are we going to do with these mementos? So that is a critical question. It's a defining point in our journey toward closure.
And you have had some great players, as we've talked about. The 2004 football team, state champions, 2002 boys basketball, state champions. Do you know what happens to this memorabilia? Does it follow the students to Mifflin? Is that what will happen if something else doesn't happen?
I hope that this memorabilia will serve as connectors to a larger learning community. Mifflin High School, I hope that they can serve as some sort of injectus, so you will, into a new learning community to show what the possibilities can be. I would love for Mifflin to look into the face of a Helen Darling, who was National Player of the Year at Penn State, Brittany Hunter, National Player at Duke, and Gate 8 National Player. So I would like Moshe Robinson, our Olympian on the mile relay team, some 96, I think, somewhere along in there, running from University of Texas. These are just great, great memories. Khalilla Carpenter, the great sprinter who ran at the University of South Carolina for Curtis Frye. These are just phenomenal individuals who have carried the torch for the Columbus City Schools and for Columbus proper.
What is your favorite memory? I know it's tough. You've been there for a number of years, longer than I've been alive probably. But what are some of your favorite memories, not only athletically but academically, from Brookhaven throughout your time?
My favorite memories are not athletic. My favorite memories are academic. All of the wonderful teachers who walked the hallways, as well as the administrators who were result-oriented in terms of their dedication, their passion, and their commitment to the students over the years that walked into the hallways of Brookhaven. And these teachers made a tremendous difference in the lives of these young people that came from, many of them came from impoverished backgrounds, but sort of pushed their ways up through the crack that, you know, society had given them. So I am indebted to those teachers and those administrators that held things together. Those are my finest memories, not athletic, but academic.
Sure. Holly Robinson is a longtime coach of several sports at Brookhaven High School, which is scheduled to close at the end of this year. Mr. Robinson, thanks again for coming in today.
And again, thank you, Ohio State University, for all that you've done and given us this moment. Thank you so much, fellas.
Jackets continue their late season playoff push. They are currently in the playoffs, but that could very easily change.
Their seed changes after every game. They lost a shootout last week to San Jose, then beat Minnesota in a shootout, then lost in regulation to Carolina Tuesday night. We asked Columbus Dispatch beat writer Aaron Portsline if it was demoralizing to lose to Carolina when they outplayed them most of the game.
Well, I think it is demoralizing, yes. I don't think it's as bad as a loss where you're sorely outplayed. I mean, there is a sense that you're going to have nights like that in the game of hockey where a goaltender just takes over the game. You know, they played hard. They played relatively well. I don't think they played, you know, that great as the shot differential would indicate. It seemed. But yeah, I don't, as demoralizing as it is, it's not well timed, of course, because this is the time of year where they need points desperately and need to beat the teams below them. But it's not a horrible performance that has them questioning how good they are. It's when you sort of chalk up and give credit to the opposing goaltender and hope that you have a better fate in future games.
Philly picked up 2 points last night against the Blackhawks in a game that was quite important for the Blue Jackets. And now the Blue Jackets have a game Thursday night and then a game Friday night. And that Friday night game could be one of the more important games of the season.
Yeah. Well, last night was in so many ways a bad night for Columbus. Philly won. The Rangers won. Detroit won. Washington won late. So if there was a noose in the Metro division, it got tighter yesterday. These next two games are ginormous. I mean, Columbus isn't really doesn't really consider Montreal on their radar yet because they're in a different division. But these are two huge points tomorrow night in Montreal. Friday, of course, is going to be an emotional night as well. Beyond the story theme of this being a huge matchup in the Metro, it will be Rick Nash's first game in Columbus since he was traded to the Rangers. We're coming into a pretty big 48-hour swing here for the Blue Jackets. But if you look at their schedule the rest of the way, boys, this is a really vicious stretch they've got coming here. I mean, they end the season with just an intense stretch of games. I've not seen anything like it. I think they've got 15 games in 24 days to end the season, which is physically taxing almost to the point where you wonder, you know, is this a fair approach? Should any team go through this? Others are, but I don't know how good this is for the games. I'm wondering if the games are going to suffer because these players, they do have human physical limitations.
Mm-hmm. Even if they do make the playoffs after that grueling stretch they have toward the end of the season, at this point they're still scheduled to play Boston, who they've lost to three times this year.
Yeah, they are right now. I mean, this changes on a nightly basis. Going into last night, I believe they were the number three seed in the Metro, so they would have played the Flyers in the first round. Now things changed last night. They dropped to the eighth seed, the second wild card, so they would play the team with the best record in the East. Columbus winless against Boston this year, winless against Pittsburgh this year. And just beyond that, I mean, that doesn't bode well, the numbers themselves. But just, I don't think anybody in the East wants to play Boston or Pittsburgh in the first round. There's a sense that once you get below Boston and Pittsburgh, all of these teams are interchangeable, and anybody could win a playoff series. And it's the Bruins, it's the Penguins you want to avoid because those are seen as the two behemoths in the East.
Aaron, you're sounding a lot less confident than you were last week about the Blue Jackets' playoff chances. Do you still think they make the playoffs?
Yeah, no, I don't intend to. It's not an intentional depression. Let me put it that way. I still think they're a playoff team. Yeah, and I think they can compete with just about anybody in the East. I mean, the important thing with this stretch of games here, there's so many highs, so many lows. I don't think last night diminishes in my mind their ability as a playoff type team. I still think they're good enough to make the playoffs in the East. They should be thankful that they're in the East because the West is a lot more difficult. But yeah, I think they're a playoff team. I don't think that's changed.
You mentioned Rick Nash's return on Friday. How packed is Nationwide Arena going to be on Friday? If they don't sell that game out, there's no game they can sell out, right?
Well, yeah, although I can tell you it's not sold out. As of right now, it's not sold out. It may be. They may have quite the walk up here. As of right now, it is not sold out, which is in many ways troubling. I think there are some troubling signs with this team. We all expected, I think most people who have seen this team play in the early days and know what kind of fan base there is in Columbus, expected the fans to show up in droves when this team was competitive in a playoff race. Well, here they are, and their attendance is down from last year. They sold more season tickets last year than they did, or for this year than they did last year, and yet their attendance is down. I don't know what to make of that other than they have not quite earned back the fans that their lousy play chased from the building. Maybe a lot of the fans in this city are a harder sell than they were before. You really have to show them something before you get them back in the building. We've said it. There's trust issues, clearly, between the fan base and the organization, and some people aren't there yet. I don't blame them. I think it's really important that we never blame the fans. They can't be wrong. I mean, if you choose to buy a ticket and you want to go to the game, that's commerce. If you choose not to buy a ticket, you know, that's your choice too. How could you be wrong? But it's going to take people here I think a little something more than the Blue Jackets even expected before they're fully emotionally back into this team again.
We've been talking Blue Jackets hockey with Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, thanks as always.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You ready for a little payback, Thomas?
Take it easy, guy. Steve is mad that I whooped him in our predictions for last week's Big Ten tournament. Steve went 7-4, and I went 9-2 and picked the champion. But first, we need to say this is all for fun and no money's involved. We've gone around the office and collected brackets from a lot of coworkers, and we're going to see how we fare against each other.
Before we get started, I do want to say that Thomas is by far the most excited I've ever seen him.
I am...
giddy. Childlike?
I'm childlike. I'm jumping up and down. This is my favorite time of year. This is March Madness.
It's very apparent. The biggest storyline, or at least the most important to local fans, OSU Dayton, they haven't played since 2008. Yep. They've only played 10 times in the history of the programs.
And they're matched up in the first round in the South region. Ohio State and Dayton. Ohio State got the 6th seed. Dayton got the 11th seed. They are playing in Buffalo, New York in the first game of the tournament, 12-15. They're ready to go. A couple storylines there. Jordan Seibert, former Ohio State player, transferred to Dayton. He told Thad Mata when he left, he's like, look, coach, I just want to play and I want to be a star somewhere. I can be that at Dayton. And he has been.
I don't know if he's a star. He scores 12 points a game. He's their best shooter.
He's the best shooter.
He's a good shooter. He's a good player. He's a pretty good player.
He wasn't going to get the minutes at Ohio State wanted. He was going to be a good seventh guy off the bench. He wasn't going to be a starter. And he has been that for Dayton. And maybe he's got a little bit of fire, a little bit of passion because he's playing Ohio State.
And he would be perfect for this team. He's the shooter they're missing.
He's the three-point threat they do not have.
And other than this, I guess I would like to say the first thing CBS analyst Seth Davis said when this game was announced was, you can't dodge him anymore, Thad. And that was a dig, obviously, at head coach Thad Mata, but larger OSU dodging teams like Dayton, Xavier, Cincinnati. Do you put any stock in that? Do you think they dodge these teams?
I don't know if they dodge them. There's been an outcry for these smaller Ohio teams for Ohio State to schedule them, and Ohio State sees no advantage to playing these Ohio teams. So yeah, they probably are dodging them in a way. Playing Cincinnati in the non-conference, playing Xavier in the non-conference, playing Dayton in the non-conference, those would be amazing, awesome games for fans of Ohio basketball, but it does nothing for Ohio State. They'd rather kill the Northwest San Diego states than to play teams that have a real chance of making Ohio State look bad.
My dad went to Northwest San Diego. It doesn't exist. What are some of the other storylines you're looking at? You said you listed a few here, but what else besides OSU Dayton, what are you really looking forward
to? I'm really excited about the two number four seeds everyone's talking about. Michigan State and Louisville both got number four seeds. Michigan State probably deserved the four seed with the way they finished out the season. But Louisville, I was a little surprised at their four seed ranking, and you've probably heard this from everyone. Yeah. They're probably more like a number two seed with the way they finished out. They struggled a little bit in the beginning of the season, but they are playing some of the best basketball right now.
I think they're toe for toe better than Wichita State. Wichita State deserves the number one seed. They were unbeaten, but in that bracket, in the Midwest bracket, I think Louisville is the best. Louisville or Duke. I have Duke going to the Final Four out of that bracket. Michigan State might be the best team in the nation right now.
Michigan State could be. I said it last week, Tom Izzo in March. And when we were talking about the Big Ten tournament, you went with Michigan, and I told you, don't count out Izzo in March. I just had to dig a little bit.
Thomas, the prophet. Also, we talked about Wichita State, the school's first top seed ever. They're a lot of fun to watch. I'm looking forward to watching Creighton as well, Doug McDermott.
Dougie McBuckets.
Yeah, a lot of players in this tournament I'm really looking forward to as well. You thought the Kentucky placement at number eight was interesting, especially right there with Wichita State. They could meet in the second round.
In that bracket of death, they did the tournament committee did Wichita State zero favors. Mm-hmm. The Midwest bracket has by far the toughest teams in it. Kentucky, who is preseason number one, might have the most raw talent in the nation and just underperformed, made their freshman mistakes, because that's what they do. They go out and they get the top high school players, and then they're
sometimes
one and
it
done.
Works, like so, Anthony Davis. Sometimes it doesn't.
But they have the most raw talent of almost any team, and they had it preseason. So Wichita State could be playing Kentucky on, I think they play Thursday and Saturday. They could be playing them in the second game of the tournament.
Do you think the selection committee does this type of thing? They do this thing occasionally, and it really has to be on purpose. I think they're basically saying to Wichita State, hey, you made it. Congrats. Now put on your big boy
prove
pants.
Prove yourself. Like, you're going to have to, if Wichita State makes it to the Final Four, they haven't lost a game this year, they're going to have to beat Kentucky. They're going to have to beat Louisville. And then they're going to have to beat the winner, I think, of Duke and Michigan. That is a bracket of death for Wichita State. If they make it there, there's not going to be any doubt that they deserve to be there.
And likewise, Ohio State, if they want to make it to the Sweet 16, they have to beat Syracuse in the second round.
Syracuse has been struggling. I almost think we're going to talk about Ohio State a little bit.
Syracuse was the top-ranked team in the nation for a while.
Ohio State was number two for a while, but Syracuse has fallen off a map. I think that game is going to be interesting. Ohio State's poor shooting against Syracuse's 2-3 zone is going to be one of the more laughable games. I don't think it's going to be high scoring. Ohio State's defense against Syracuse's defense, their shooting, it's going to be a weird game if that happens.
I think you're right. Hopefully it does happen. Hopefully OSU can advance to the second round. Let's talk about what we see out of each bracket. Out of the South, I have Kansas coming out of the South. You probably have Florida. You seem to be all up on Florida. I think they can beat Florida. I think at that point they should have Embiid back. I think Kansas is the best team there.
Yes, I do like Florida coming out of the South bracket. The problem I have with Kansas is Joel Embiid is probably going to be out for those first two games, if not more. And they're going to get a tough draw with New Mexico in that second round. And I actually have Kansas being upset in the second round by New Mexico without Embiid.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Going out on a limb there.
Going with the value pick. New Mexico is underrated. I think they should be more like a 5 or a 4 seed. Very strong out of the Mountain West. I got Florida coming out of that bracket.
Out of the East, I think we both have Michigan State.
I do not, just because everyone – my bracket's crazy. Everyone,
you're a contrarian.
Everyone in the world has Michigan State coming out of that bracket.
You're that guy. You
so if it happens, yeah, I'm not going to win a bracket, but I need to do something to separate myself from anyone else. I have Villanova coming out of the East, Villanova beating Michigan State in the round of 8.
Villanova is the best team I know the least about this year. I know nothing about – I feel like they flew under the radar the whole season.
They did. They had some disappointing losses. They were blown out by Creighton, who can just –
well,
shoot
Dougie
the ball.
Buckets.
Dougie McBuckets. Villanova is a consistent team, and they're not going to wow you anyway, but I think they have the defense to take care of Michigan State.
Out of the West, I have Arizona beating Wisconsin to get to the Final Four.
I have Arizona beating Dougie McBuckets and Creighton.
You think Creighton's that good of a team?
I think Creighton has the Creighton can be the best team on the court at any time, just with the way they shoot. So whether it's hot or cold, Wisconsin could steal this bracket. They have they have the highest offensive and defensive efficiencies of most teams in the nation. They have a consistently high offensive efficiency and a consistently high defensive efficiency. So they're gonna shut teams down and score their points. They're gonna be a team to watch in the West bracket.
Sure, they're a 2 seed for a reason. And in the Midwest, I have Duke beating Louisville to get to the Final Four.
I do too. I've dude taking down Louisville. I don't trust Wichita State. I might even have them losing to Kentucky. Right now I have them beating Kentucky but falling to Louisville. But any team that comes out of that bracket is going to have earned that with Wichita State, Kentucky, Louisville, Duke, and Michigan.
I feel like Duke is not getting nearly enough love with Hood coming on, being one of the best players in the country the latter part of the season. Jabari Parker, who is absolutely one of the best players in the NCAA. When we get to the Final Four, I have Arizona beating Duke to get to the final game and Kansas beating Michigan State.
I have Arizona beating Duke to get to the final game as well. Arizona is a very athletic team.
I haven't watched Arizona a single time this year.
Well, then that's a smart pick you just made.
Right.
No, Arizona is very athletic. They're going to jump all over you. They're going to be the most athletic team on the court outside of maybe a healthy Kansas. They fly around the ball and they're going to put up their points. I've got Florida beating Villanova on the other side of the bracket with Florida rolling through this tournament and winning this championship.
And I have Kansas beating Michigan State and Kansas winning it all. This is all assuming Joel Embiid is healthy and Andrew Wiggins can be the normal Andrew Wiggins. I think they are the best team. I think they have 2 lottery picks, and I think when you get that far, 2 players like that take over. They'll just ride those players to the end.
Everyone's got a perfect bracket right now, but that's going to change as soon as they start playing the game. So
mine won't change.
No one knows it. Well, if you win $1 billion in the $1 billion bracket challenge, you can share it with us and all the listeners. We'd appreciate
that.
I'll
buy you a coffee.
Thanks, man.
That will do it for this week's edition of After the Score from WOSU Public Media. Join us next week as we update our brackets. If you don't hear Thomas, it's because he's ashamed and he couldn't stand the idea of facing me.
Right, just like the Big Ten tournament. I'm off next week, but you can always find the show at wosu.org/afterthescore and on iTunes. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.